are
Did you
here.
Miss us?
Back like we never left for months.
I'm Shayla.
I'm Justin, and this is Scaredy Chats. We're a podcast that recaps and retells scary movies for the scaredy cats out there.
Yes, and watch our movies and recap, retell them.
Yeah, just catch up.
Catch up. We've been... Our last episode was in November.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing... I was finishing up my classes.
Yep.
Thank God we're done with them.
Woohoo!
I finished one class with an A minus, and Nicely I will never done. Forgive myself for that. Ever.
I try to get Shayla to relax with it, but that's not helpful.
No, you didn't. You just, like, put me on blast.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But anyway, and then Thanksgiving came. We went to visit Justin's family.
Yeah. Drove from Florida to Illinois.
Yes, it was a long drive.
With our two dogs.
Yes, and I don't, like, 2-3 days after we went to Miami. Mm-hmm. No. I got sick.
Of course.
I got sick with some weird virus flu. Or no, that was before Illinois. It's a blur. Yeah, because that pushed back our day to Illinois.
Oh, you're right. You got sick before we went to Illinois, and then we got back, and then we went to Miami, and then you got sick again.
And then I got sick again before New Year's. We spent Christmas with my family.
Yeah, I got to be Santa Claus for Shayla's nieces and nephews, who are like anywhere from one.
And me and my brothers.
Oh, yeah, of course. I did have them all. And presents and stuff. We went hard. You found a good Santa costume, and then we
for
did some like
bucks.
Yeah. Oh, that was 30 bucks. I thought that was more.
It was 50, and then it had a discount on Amazon, and then we had a coupon also.
Nice.
So it turned out to be like 30.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah. So it was a pretty good beard. We had to like do some trimming of the wig, because it was a hat, beard, and then like jacket, pants, the whole shebang.
My mom sewed the beard and the wig to your hat or something
That was a game changer, because otherwise the wig was like falling down my head and I couldn't see.
It was not a high-quality wig. It was like super synthetic, white, plastic-looking hair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 30 bucks, but...
True.
But if we made it work. And so we get up, or like I get up, day comes, it's Christmas Eve, all the kids are out doing stuff, and I go sneak away, and Shayla helps me get ready. And so like their house has a balcony that connects to a roof that, like, I can walk around to the backyard. And so they're all, like, all the kids and stuff are doing their thing. And then I come around and I just, like, was like, ho, 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 you know that? But I only really practiced my Santa voice saying, ho, 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 Merry Christmas. And then I was like, is that Avery I see, Shayla's niece? And then she goes, the seven-year-old, is that Justin? Seeing me on the roof from the backyard, probably, I don't know, 40 feet away.
I was so disappointed.
It was so sad.
When we first got the costume, you were like killing it. You sounded just like Santa. You were saying more things than ho ho ho. And then,
I got nervous.
Then it's
I got
like
stage
time
fright.
For you to do the whole show, and you're like, hi everyone.
Oh my god.
It's me, it's Santa. And I was like, Justin, can you like change your voice?
Yeah.
Like, hello.
I guess I wasn't in the character of Santa at the moment.
You weren't. You didn't have the jolly good spirit going on.
No.
But it was nice to see the kids enjoy you. I think other than that, I think you did a good job.
Yeah. Avery was eventually convinced. She was dubious at first, but
we made up a lie that Justin was in the bathroom having diarrhea and throwing up.
So thank you for that.
And that's why you miss Santa.
Yeah, because then Avery was like, yeah, I miss Santa. Asking me, I miss Santa. So that was at least...
So she either believed it or...
I don't know. My theory is she doesn't believe it, but she's hiding it from the adults to at least let them think that she believes.
The funny thing is that, like, a couple of days later, or like weeks later, we like left the Santa costume on the table at my parents' house, and like Avery's coming to visit and whatever. We don't even notice the Santa costume is like right there in the
living room.
Yeah,
it's folded up on the kitchen table.
Yeah. Thankfully no one found out. But other than that, I got sick before New Year's. Mm-hmm. New Year's came, I was sick. I passed it on to my brother.
That was a little cruel. Maybe we shouldn't have gone. But it was New Year's.
It was New Year's, and I was feeling better, and so I...
Yeah.
I was feeling better, and it was outside, so I was keeping my distance from people.
That's true.
But,
Lord knows how I didn't get it.
You haven't been getting sick.
I know. Remember, in 2022, I got sick all the time, and now it's like... You get sick all the time, and I'm just like,
I'm getting sick all the time.
Dodging everything, every which way.
You passed it on to me. Mm-hmm. But that's what we've been up to. We've just been globetrotting.
America trotting.
Globetrotting to Illinois and Miami. That's it.
That's all
we
go to.
We've been to.
Yeah.
But I got to spend time with family. You got to spend time with family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very refreshing. And now we're back. We got back.
About a week ago.
And so we're just chilling now.
Yeah.
And getting settled into my semester.
Getting settled to get ideally dramatically unsettled.
Yeah.
Potentially soon, because I'm also interviewing for jobs.
So we might move, and we're kind of just, like, in a little bit of a limbo. Where
yeah, it's just, like, I don't... It seems like I would get one of the jobs, at least, but I don't know anything. And so I can't, like...
Well, you... Like, so the difficult part is that you have an unofficial job offer
pending
situation.
Yeah.
But we don't know 100%. We're kind of just like, we know we might have to be moving mm-hmm. by mid-February.
Yeah.
But we really can't start, or we maybe shouldn't start moving until we have an official thing going on. So it's just been this huge limbo. But anyway, so we're back and better than ever.
That's right.
We're excited. I have so many movies that I want to watch and recap, and mm-hmm. so I'm so excited to get back into it.
Yeah, it's so fun to, like, get back to watching them, too.
Yes.
I feel like we've been cooled on it, but now
yeah,
we're, like,
we
back in the swing of things.
We haven't used our Regal Pass. We went for the first time in God knows how long,
mm-hmm.
a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And and we bought a super expensive Regal sweatshirt.
Oh, God. Yeah.
For no reason other than we needed to, like... So here's my rationale behind it. Because I bought the sweatshirt.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Thank you. It's my sweatshirt.
Oh, I was wearing it today.
Were you really?
This morning I put it on.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. I haven't even tried it on. But anyway, so... With the whole sentiment of we might be moving, we might not be moving, but it's pretty much like a 95% chance we're going to move.
That's confident.
I think she literally told you we will most likely be sending you a job offer in the upcoming days.
Yeah.
So I feel like no one's going to tell you that. No boss is going to tell you that and then not follow through with it. But anyways, I might be wrong.
Maybe one of my references was just like, yeah, he...
Shut up. Mm-hmm. So... Here I am thinking, like, we're going to be moving, we're going to do a tour of Gainesville and go to all our favorite places. And Regal, like, mm-hmm. we used to go to Regal, like, multiple times a week.
Yeah.
And
we made use
I love
of the pass.
It. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just a $1 date.
I love it. It's amazing. I feel like I've been able to, like, follow through the employees that are there.
Oh, yeah. They've had definitely, like, waves of people.
Yeah.
From the one person who didn't allow us entry because you didn't have your ID.
Yes.
And we're like, how do we prove that you're older than 17?
I know I look young, but I for sure...
Like, here's my teacher ID.
Yeah, I was like, listen, I'm a teacher. Look at my ID, please. I cannot teach if I'm 17.
I respect the person for taking their job seriously, but...
But whatever.
Yeah.
So, what was I even saying? Oh, so... So, in the spirit of saying goodbye to Gainesville,
mm-hmm.
I saw the Regal sweatshirt. They had a bunch of merch. I saw the Regal sweatshirt, and I just knew I needed to have it. And so, I was picturing that it would cost, like, anywhere from $30 to $50.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty nice sweatshirt. Cool lettering and stuff.
Yeah, the lettering was, like, kind of foamy, like, mm-hmm. three-dimensional.
Yeah, and, like, it was beyond just, like, the square of the back, but, like, it went around on the shoulders, too, and, like, all the way down.
Yeah, cool sweatshirt.
Yeah, it was cool. It is cool.
Our plan, I thought I communicated, was to take the sweatshirt to the counter and ask how much does it cost. And Justin goes, and instead of doing that, you just, like, go and they scan it, and it's, like, ready to pay. And I go and I see on the screen $70.
Listen, the thing you have
My
to understand...
My heart sank.
The thing you have to understand about me is I am an anxious person.
Not when it comes to things like that.
Yeah?
No.
On the spot, yes.
No. But the
I
plan,
have to prep myself.
The plan was for you to ask, how much did this cost?
Yes.
And then he just hands the sweatshirt to the lady, and she, like, scans it. And then I see $70, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what, like, well, at this point, she scanned it. I'm like, yeah. We're here in line. There's a bunch of people around us. I'm not going to be like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to take it. Mm. But we did get a discount, so it came out to be like around 60-something.
Yeah.
So, but no regrets. I feel like the employees probably were like really...
They were judging us.
Like judging us.
Like, you bought this shitty sweatshirt for 70 bucks.
They probably hate Regal.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Much.
They're like, I couldn't imagine. Like, they're probably like, these capitalist shills. Supporting a big corporation for no reason, but
we've been excited to start watching movies again. Yeah. There's a couple movies coming out in theater that we're excited to watch.
Oh yeah,
as well as movies like on streaming, Netflix, mm-hmm. and also just older movies that we have been waiting to recap, like Saw.
Oh yeah,
which I'm excited to That's also do. But yeah, so. This week's movie is none other than, was it Heretic or Heretic?
Heretic.
Heretic.
Yeah. Heretic 2024.
Yeah. I keep thinking it's Heretic, but I digress. Yeah. So this movie is with none other than Hugh Grant.
Yes, the Oompa Loompa Man himself.
The Oompa Loompa Man.
For those that have watched the newest Willy Wonka installment.
Yeah, so, you know, after watching this movie, I don't think he's a good Oompa Loompa. I don't think he captures the Oompa Loompa essence.
I'd have to watch Willy Wonka again and go back to the old Oompa Loompas. But you're basing your Oompa Loompa reference on the Johnny Depp Willy Wonka.
No, I'm actually referencing it on the other one.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Huh. I remember the Oompa Loompas as like little Lord Farquaads with spray
cans.
Yeah, spray
I guess
cans.
Maybe he does. Maybe he does. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like his head is just too big. Oompa Loompas' heads are huge.
Yeah, yeah. But like, that's why I thought you were talking about the like Johnny Depp ones.
His head is too big and his body is also very like built, which I think makes it like not... I don't know, whatever. But the movie, Heretic, is... Mm-hmm. With three main characters.
Yes.
You have Hugh Grant, who plays Mr. Reed.
Mr. Reed.
Sophie Thatcher, who plays Sister Barnes. And Chloe East, who plays Sister Paxton.
Mm-hmm. So, and they're pretty much the whole cast for the movie.
Yeah.
A few small side things, but like, this, it's just a three-person film.
This
which is kinda
movie
cool.
Had a heck of a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, way too much dialogue. I was thinking about the recap, and I was like, there's no way on earth that we're going to recap this.
Yeah, it's
in a way
it's
that
a
makes
lot
sense
of, it's,
at
it's
all.
It's just a conversation that progresses.
Yeah,
which is really cool, like, how it presents, but it's also, like, how much plot and how many different scenes are there actually happening.
Yeah.
Because it's really only, like, three locations.
So we're going to do our best.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is... They talk so much. Mm-hmm. Hugh Grant talks so...
There's so much...
So much.
Yeah. Mr. Reed is wordy.
He can really yap.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know how the recap's gonna go because...
Yeah. It's a lot of social tension.
Yes, that's the best
like
way
that.
To describe
and
it.
And that's, you know... That is one where I think it's like... It's... If you're not into, like, gore and obsessively gross things... There's some not ideal things in here, but like...
Yeah, it's not really... I wouldn't really call it a scary... Like, what we think of
scary.
When we think of scary.
Mm-hmm. But it's got tension and suspense.
It does. Yes.
It's like a safe tension and suspense, I would
yes.
call it.
So, just the movie...
Cool. Until it's not.
The movie is two young missionaries become ensnared in a deadly game of cat and mouse when they knock on the door of the diabolical Mr. Reed. Trapped in his home, they must turn to their faith if they want to make it out alive. So it's the majority of the movie is like in the house, and it is
yeah.
They did a great job describing it as a game of cat and mouse because that
scaredy
really
cat.
Becomes the a game of scaredy cat and
except
mouse.
The cat was not scared. The mice were scared.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. before we dive right in, let's talk about our courageous cat moment.
Oh yeah.
Of this week. So, you want to go first?
Yes, I'll go first. As is the common theme with mine has to do with overcoming my anxieties.
Oh my god, I knew it. My eyes are rolling so far back.
I can't help it. So, for me, and you're going to roll your eyes even more at this.
I need more wine.
Yeah, keep drinking your wine. It's fine. So, the Jeep, our car, your car.
Oh my gosh, shut up. I know it. Okay, carry on.
Oh, no, you tell it.
No, it's your moment. It's
for your So grace. We had a Jeep service, bring it back up to home, and now we're like, it comes back on. And I'm like, ah, crap. You know, what happened? We find out that you can go to AutoZone, get the check engine light, check to see what it is. And the guy, car guy, like, says, oh, it's this coolant thing. You got to do this, this, and that, and maybe this, and then you'll be fine. And I was like, oh, okay. It's scary that they talk fast and they don't explain things very well
at first. In your defense, the guy also didn't seem
like he was incredibly disinterested.
Yeah, he didn't seem like he was moved to help us that much.
He was not felt it in his spirit.
Yeah, he was just like, let me do the bare minimum to just get these people out of here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. My courageous cat was, well, after some goading by Shayla to get my butt back in there, I went back in and like asked for clarification and then like asked follow-up questions to like actually understand what was going on. She's rolling her eyes.
Justin was there for like an hour.
I was not there for an hour. I was there for 5 minutes.
No, you were there for like longer than 5 minutes.
Well, I had to wait because there was people in line in front of me. I talked to a car guy. To be clear, I know nothing about cars. Asked questions, was okay not knowing things. And now we have the part sitting on our table. Obviously, it's easy for me because I'm a man, so like they're gonna talk to me maybe more straight up and not talk down.
Yeah.
Because like,
which I would like to say that the second the check engine light came on, the very next day, mm-hmm. I saw a thing, and I was like, I feel like this is the issue, and it was the issue.
But I've seen it like that before.
Okay, whatever. Justin knows that I figured out what the issue is and still does not.
All right. You were right. You were absolutely right about that.
Yeah. Does that come as a shocker to you?
I felt like I've seen it be low before.
Not like that. Anyway, so yeah. My courageous cat moment of this week was actually this Monday when we came back home finally and Justin had a job interview.
God, was that Monday?
Yeah, that was Monday.
Oh my god, it feels like years ago.
Had a job interview in Tampa.
It was like all day.
Yeah, it was all day. So he was out of the house and I was home alone for the first time in God knows how long.
Yeah.
Like, I've been home alone for maybe like 1, 2 hours, 3, but like the entire day.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, because
you left at like 6.
Yeah.
And you didn't come back till like 7 p.m.
8
p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That was a long day.
Leading up to this day, I was scared that I would be super anxious just because since you've been looking for jobs, we've been able to spend so much time together.
Yeah.
That
you get your
being alone has now become intimidating. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what am I gonna do? How am I gonna pass the time?
Who knew you'd like me that much?
Yeah, surprisingly. but surprisingly, I remember I was talking to Justin on his drive back up and I'm like, Justin, I feel so bad because like I don't want you to come back.
And I was like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, but it was more along the lines of I felt like super independent in a good way. Yeah. And I was like, having that time by myself allowed me to like think about like what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so like I was watching Love is Blind, I was folding clothes, it's cleaning,
housewife.
Yeah, vibes. Which made me like now realize that I'm gonna quit my program and I'm
no,
gonna become a housewife.
I don't have the job yet. And but we need your income.
We need my sad little income. Mm-hmm. But that was my courageous cat moment this week.
I'm proud
week.
Of you for that.
I did genuinely. It, and I was like totally fine.
That's
so
very cool.
That was cool. Anyway, so let's get into it because I'm excited to figure out how on earth we're gonna tell this story.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll do our best. It opens up to this
condom ad.
Gorgeous condom ad.
Yeah.
This gorgeous scenery.
Magnum ad. It was small condom next to gigantic big condom.
The scenery was not that. It was two young girls or like maybe our age sitting on a bench. Mm-hmm. And actually I do wonder how old they are.
Early 20s
maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on a bench, we can see their backs, and there is a
beautiful Utah, I assume,
mountain view. Yeah, probably, actually,
considering it's
and so the girls are talking And Justin did not bring up Magnum condoms for no reason. They're actually talking about Magnum condoms and how these condoms are supposed to be the same size mm-hmm. as regular condoms. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how much truth there is to that. I can imagine that.
I can imagine there's some truth.
Some truth.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we kind of just gave away that you don't use Magnums.
Yes.
You cut that out.
I'm okay with it. It's fine.
But anyway, so they start saying, like, are these regular size or are these not? Mm-hmm. And this conversation, within the context of the movie, as you keep watching it, starts to make sense yeah. because they start talking in a way that brings to light this idea of marketing.
Yeah. How things are so much more as we, like, how they're presented to us versus what they actually are.
Yes.
And this is what the movie touches on, primarily through looking at religion.
Yes. Like, what are we intaking? Mm-hmm. And what are we believing based off of what we're intaking?
Yeah. And how does that compare to what is really there?
Yes.
So everyone go to r/religion on Reddit and type in your theories now.
They are intense. Mm-hmm. So it opens up to these two girls. We have Sister Paxton mm-hmm. and Sister Barnes. If you were to picture Sister Paxton, you picture a very
Sister Paxton is a goody two shoes. And Sister Barnes is, like, drawing on her arm in class.
She's, like, edgy.
Yeah. That's basically, like...
That is a really good way of describing
it. Right? Them. I thought that, so that's why I had to interrupt you there, but...
Yes. But Sister Paxton, like Justin said, she's very soft. She's very delicate. Mm-hmm. She has, like, this dirty blonde hair. Mm-hmm. It's, like, half up, half down.
Prim and proper. Proper.
She's wearing a, like...
Grandma outfit.
A gray blazer coat type of thing. Mm-hmm. And underneath that, she has a little pink cardigan. And she's wearing a, like, brown flowy skirt yeah. with, like, these little Oxford loafers and, like, white socks. So,
love that.
So that's what she looks like. She looks very grandma-y mm-hmm. in a really good way. And then we have Sister Barnes, who is the antithesis of Sister Paxton.
Black hair.
She's wearing all black.
Dark.
Her
clothes.
Hair is super dark. Mm-hmm. She has pretty fair skin. Mm-hmm. So it, like, makes it even contrast
very
even
edgy.
More.
Yeah. On the edge of goth.
And
as
like,
goth
these
as a Mormon could be.
Bangs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was really liking
Were
the
you
hair.
Inspired?
I was inspired. I was
cool.
inspired.
Nice.
But yeah, I feel like these two girls and their styles kind of represent me as a whole.
You're the Venn diagram in between them.
Depending on my mood. Like,
yeah,
some
yeah,
days
yeah.
I'm more Sister Paxton, other days
Ooh,
I'm more Sister
Barnes. Oh, I'm going to be
Barnes.
Asking you that. And, like, if we see a Peaceful or Thrifting, it's like, is this more of a Paxton or a Barnes? Or is this maybe a little bit too Paxton for you?
Or maybe it's a blend of the two.
Yeah.
It's Paxton and Barnes.
It's a Barnes.
It's Paxton.
Paxton is better.
Or Barnes.
That's what I said.
Oh, okay. So, in their conversation, but Sister Paxton, Miss Goody Two Shoes, starts to talk about pornography, as she calls it.
I feel like she's being fake with mispronouncing that.
No, I think I... Well, maybe...
I feel like she's being fake with... Because we'll think of what she says later, but...
I think that she actually watched porn. Mm-hmm. And was trying to hide it. Because how was she on there?
Yeah. Well, are you doing it for academic purposes?
The essence of the conversation was that she was saying that she watched a porn video. Mm-hmm. And in that video, there was a woman who was being very loud and moaning. And in doing that, they were in like a hotel setting, the porn stars. And so the woman was moaning really loud and screaming and whatever, and someone on, like, a different room of the hotel, like, bangs on the door. And, like, I don't know,
just
says
like,
something.
Yeah, because, like, they were making noise, they were loud enough
to
be heard.
They were very loud, according to Sister Paxton. Mm-hmm. And Sister Paxton says that even though the woman was kind of brushed it off and was, like, cool about it, that her face showed that she was somewhat... like, ashamed or felt that this was not
shame.
What she was made for.
Yeah.
And the whole reason I tell this conversation is because Sister Paxton brings it back to her belief in God and attributes this moment to why she knows God is real. Because
of the shame that the actress felt, that meant that she was doing something wrong innately, is what she's arguing. Which is like, I don't know, I guess.
Yeah, because what she was saying is like, God is real because she wouldn't have felt that shame otherwise if she wasn't designed to not be doing things like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So kind of attributing to like all these things to there being a higher being. But again, I bring that up because this becomes a recurring theme throughout the movie. Religion is like, this movie is just
religious. How do you know religion is true?
Yes, that's
buckle up
the main theme. So we learned that Sister Paxton and Sister Barnes are doing, I don't know the correct term they're for this, but missionary. All I think about is evangelizing.
Yeah, they're being missionaries throughout their community. Nice one.
Yes.
So they're going around together. Anyone on the street, they'll just be like, can we talk to her about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? But then they also have, like, some marks that they're, like, supposed to go to who indicated that they maybe would be interested in learning more about the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints.
We move into part one of this movie. So this was all the opening. We move into, like, the first.
Yeah. We see them in the action, but now what they're going on.
So they approach this large house. And it starts to get, like, a little cloudy, a little rainy. They're traveling on bikes.
Yeah.
And they lock their bikes in front of the house. So they approach the house, and this man, Hugh Grant, whose character is Mr. Reed, opens the door.
Mr. Reed.
And what was your first impression about Mr. Reed?
So he gave the biggest effort to try and be a kind, sweet old man. Cool sweater, trying to be charismatic, but was also very clearly trying very hard.
He was trying very hard.
So he's like, they knock on the door, and after a while he answers. He's like, hello, what, hi? And then they're like, we're here to talk to you about the church. And he's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He's like way too excited to like talk to random people on his doorstep.
Exactly, exactly.
He's just waiting for someone to talk to during his day.
And they didn't just stumble upon this house. They were going to people's homes that had indicated that they were interested in learning more.
Yeah.
So he had done that, and they were following up on him.
He asked for people to come.
But it's raining. It's pouring. It's raining. Cats and dogs everywhere.
Scaredy cats.
And so he invites them to come in. And one thing that they ask him is if he has a girl roommate. He mentions he has a wife. And they say, okay, yeah, we'll come in. And one of the things that he says is that his wife is baking blueberry pie. Which, I'm more of an apple pie.
I haven't had a blueberry pie.
I think blueberry pie sounds like way too sweet. It sounds like way too much.
I don't know. If you get enough lemon in there... I could.
Yeah,
I could,
but just think about like a whole pie filled with a bunch of filling.
I mean, I eat blueberries like by the handful, though.
You do. But I think it's just the idea of it being so much filling.
So much jam. I guess yeah, I get you. Either way, it probably smelled pretty good.
Yes. So they come in, and this is the first part that is filled with a crap load of dialogue.
Yeah, this is dialogue manifesto part one.
Yes. So they're walking into this house. Picture a house with wallpaper everywhere.
70s house type
of
thing.
It is very yellow. And we learn that the walls and ceilings are metal.
Yeah. Mr. Reed goes like, oh, just so you know, the doors and walls are metal. And the girls are like, oh, okay. That's fine.
And we also learn that there is some weird timer ticking thing that's there.
Yeah.
So that's that. They sit down and they begin this super long-winded conversation about the church.
Yeah. And all the basics and stuff like that.
Yeah. At first, it kind of starts off just like them getting control of the conversation.
They're giving their general spiel that they do all the time. Yeah.
Then, as Mr. Reed begins to talk and talk and talk and talk, we start to learn that he actually knows a lot more than what we thought he knew.
It's clear that he's studied in theology in some way.
Yeah.
And he's starting now to kind of turn the questions back on them, and that the conversation feeling is a little bit different.
It is revealed that he actually has a Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah. He is
in
already.
In his home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, I start to ask myself, where's his wife?
Yeah. Like, it's been probably like 20 minutes, we'll say.
Yeah.
In conversation time. And his wife has not made any appearance. And it's finally, like, acknowledged by Paxton and Barnes that, like, oh, you know, what's going on? This seems a little weird.
Something that I forgot about in our little recap that we were doing is when he asked how her dad died.
Oh, yeah.
And
she goes, Lou Gehrig's disease. Like, mumbles it a little bit.
Yeah. And then he says, blueberry disease. Ha, 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 ha. Like, he's, like, laughing, thinking she made a joke.
And she's like, no, Lou Gehrig's disease. Like, yeah. ALS.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh. Oh. And so, like, it's awkward. I mean, it's always been a little awkward, but it's, like, properly awkward now.
It's, like, those moments that you do something that's so embarrassing. Have you ever had a moment like that where you...
I've never been embarrassed.
Trying to think if I have any moments where I have genuinely, like, said something wrong or, like, did something.
I mean, you ever gone for a high five and just the person not seen it?
No.
Well, aren't you cool?
Well, I think some moments that are awkward is, like, when you go in for a handshake and someone goes in for a hug.
Yeah,
or, like, vice versa.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's ever been, like, a moment. But I'm also very forgetful.
Yeah.
But I am curious to know, like, it reminds me of the TikTok trend where people were talking about
the embarrassing
things that had happened to them. Like, awkward things. Yeah. But
nothing on that scale.
This is pretty bad. If someone says Lou Gehrig's disease and you're, like, blueberry disease.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I feel like it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. The conversation also has this growing tension inside of it.
And as the tension's growing, boom,
the lights turn off,
and the lights turn off.
Yeah.
Conversation starts to become more on Mr. Reed's side, where he starts to take more control of where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this theme of saying, let me ask you an awkward question. Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question.
It's like built up like it's going to be the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah. And he asks them how they feel about polygamy. So he starts to like talk circles around them. They start to mention how the purpose of polygamy at the beginning of the like creation of the church was people.
Grow the population. Yeah. Which maybe, I guess. Yeah. Fair. But like, I don't know. It still seems like a cop-out, but he's coming up with the argument that, like, Joseph Smith stepped out of his marriage and then, like, got excused from it because through the words of, like, revelations.
Yeah.
Of his own, like, prophecy.
Which, I don't know anything about the Church of Latter-day Saints, but I can totally just
I could see a person doing that.
A person doing that. Saying, like, oh, crap, I just did something bad.
I got caught.
Actually, this was
God. This was God's plan.
But you know what? You see that a lot. I could speak on the evangelical church side of things. But you see that so much with people and their hypocrisy, where they will say something like for example, with Paul and Morgan. Oh, yeah. So Paul and Morgan are these two YouTubers who are Christian, evangelical Christians, and they are very fundamentalist. So in, I follow the Reddit Fundy Snark community.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always, like, keeping up with, like,
what they're
some
doing.
Of the crazy things they're doing, which is I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, this could be our second podcast.
But anyway, so they at first talked about how they didn't believe in birth control because they wanted to have
it's all
a
God's
child
plan.
In God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with fundamentalists and Christians in often generalizing it is it's not enough for you to believe something. You have to have other people believe that same thing.
Yeah. You're going to hold yourself to a standard and then judge everyone else for not being at that same standard with you.
Exactly. And so what these people did was like talking about how like you shouldn't use birth control because it's, you know, it's like you have to let God guide you. Mm-hmm. And they're not like the only people who think that. There are so many fundies who think that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so.
Which like also to be clear. If that's your belief, go with God. Fine.
Yeah, exactly. But
it's not your right to put that on other people.
It's the imposing of it.
Yes.
So, also, it's very dangerous.
Yes, incredibly dangerous.
So, in the case of Paul and Morgan, Morgan had a baby, and it was a very traumatic birth. Like, she almost died.
Yeah.
And shortly after, she got pregnant. And she posted this pregnancy video where she was sobbing. Because she was pregnant. And
she
I'm like, girl,
not
as
okay.
you should, because I would be
yes, how traumatic would that be?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, like, everybody on Reddit was like, oh my God, poor girl. Like, this is, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she had her second child. So now she has these two children that she's taking care of. Three, if you count Paul. Because Paul, instead of being a present father, is out there trying to become a professional pickleball player.
You should say that again for the people in the back.
Yes, Paul instead of Paul? Being a father. What?
No, no, that's exactly... I'm laughing at the situation, not at you.
Paul, instead of being a father, is trying to become a professional pickleball player. And I, whoever's listening to this, I'm not being dramatic. I'm not, like, overemphasizing this or, like, embellishing the story.
That is his stated goal. That is and his goal. Entire social media dedication right now.
Yes. So, poor Morgan is here raising these two kids on her own and, like, not able to do anything. But why do I say all this?
Yeah.
Because they recently put out a video where she said that now they're using birth control because they feel led by God to, like, not have any more children or...
Very
or
convenient.
It was just, like, yeah, it just felt right to them.
Yeah.
So it's this theme where I can see what he's talking about and I can see what Mr. Reed was trying to communicate. This idea of using religion as an excuse for, like,
for your behavior that you want
to
do.
Yeah, or for what, like, benefits you as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly.
And that's this argument that he's kind of putting out there. You can start to see his stance on things where mm-hmm. you can notice that, like, he really isn't here for...
No, he's not here to learn about the Mormon Church. He's here to, like, you haven't trapped me here. I've trapped you here with me.
Yeah.
To talk about what I believe.
So his follow-up question after all that is, what's your favorite fast food? And they go ahead and they talk about, like, there's Burger King, there's Hardee's, there's mm-hmm. Rally's, Checkers, yeah. there's McDonald's, there's Wendy's, there's Jack in the Box, there's In-N-Out. They didn't mention KFC or Popeyes.
Yeah, they were, and no chicken in there.
No.
Only burger places.
I wonder
places.
If they needed to have, like, a license to
no,
mention
No, because,
it.
Like, some of those are, like, all just PepsiCo under the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know what, but, like...
What is your favorite fast food?
I think it is KFC. It's KFC mac and cheese. KFC mac and cheese and biscuit every day till I die.
Ooh.
That sounds really good.
It actually sounds really good right
Not
now.
Not sponsored, but...
The whole reason I bring this up is because he comes and brings another analogy that ends up becoming a central theme in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He says that when he was younger, he was, like, trying all the different fast food, trying to find which one was his favorite... And each time, I don't even know what he said.
He said something to the effect of, like, some McNuggets, a BK Whopper, trying to pick and choose from each different thing to come with the one true best fast food.
Yes. And this becomes an analogy for what is the one true religion. And he says something that is, the more you know, the less you know. And that really caught my attention because I think that that's actually true.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, yeah. one of the things that he said that was really true. It's just like, yeah, I personally feel that way when I explore religion and mm-hmm. what I believe in. It's like, the more you are learning, the more you recognize that you don't know much.
Yeah. Or even, like, in science or any kind of topic.
Yeah.
It's like, if you, the more you understand, the more you understand about what is not known.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, you know, expertise in a subject is not just knowing everything, but also knowing what's not known.
Exactly.
Which, like, you know, so he's not making just, like, he's not a raving lunatic, you know, he's speaking coherently.
Yeah.
And making, like arguable points.
Yes. We come back and try to, you know... bring the tone in the movie and what it's like. It is mm-hmm. very, it's still dark.
Yeah.
It is very, like, suspenseful. Mm-hmm. And we move into part two of the movie. They go ahead and they ask to meet the wife.
Yeah, because it's been long now, and it's, like, getting tense, and they're like, okay, can we meet your wife, please? Because they need to know that she's there.
Yeah, it's part of their rules. Mm-hmm.
Which also makes sense for safety purposes.
Also, yeah, like, it shouldn't even be a rule. It should just be, like,
yeah.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so... he says he's gonna go get his wife, and he blows out this candle that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Barnes grabs the candle, and what does she see?
She sees that the candle scent is blueberry pie.
Ooh. At this point...
Out.
Out.
I mean, I've been trying to
immediately.
Leave.
I would grab the first thing in my hand,
mm-hmm.
first thing I could find, and use it as a weapon.
Yeah, because... That is a clear sign that he's been lying.
Yes.
Because they smelled the blueberry pie that was supposedly cooking in the kitchen.
Yes.
But they realized this entire time it's just been the blueberry pie candle.
There was no blueberry pie. Mm-hmm.
Another fun detail I want to share is that he's been sipping out of a mug that says hubby.
Oh, yeah.
In cursive letters this entire time.
It's like this teal blue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very much like Father's Day gift.
It looks like you got it on, like, those stock.
Yeah,
stock.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Oh, it's like a Shutterfly.
Yeah, Shutterfly. Yeah. Looks like you got it there.
His quote-unquote wife got him that.
Yeah. He goes and he tells them, hey, come into this room here. Yeah, to in go this further into the house
through a dark hallway.
To come meet my wife.
Yeah.
God, no. I would not go into a dark hallway it's following very, this guy. Yeah,
it's very clear that, like, that is, the, you know, both the girls recognize that it's unsafe and this is weird.
Yeah.
Like, this is no longer social norms by any stretch of the imagination.
They pretend that they got a phone call, and during that time, they try to escape. So they're looking around, they realize that they don't have their coats, and in the coats, there are the keys to their bike lock.
And it's like a 4-mile walk back.
Yeah, and they also realize that the door, the front door of the house is locked. So at this point, they recognize that their only option is to go and find Mr. Reed and ask him to let them out, which is really, really not their only option. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree with you when you told me that you would have stayed in that room.
Yeah. But the thing they realize is their only way to continue being safe is to keep playing his game.
Yeah.
Like, to keep being polite. Their engagement in his conversations are the only way they can extend their time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, clearly he wants them to stay there.
So they go through this very dark, dark super hallway.
Super freaky.
With a statue of what looks like to be Jesus, but I really don't know what the statue is.
I didn't see it again.
It's like a bust of something. That would have scared me.
Oh, that might have been like a Roman bust. Oh, maybe. That looked more like Roman and marble structure.
They go into this really pretty green room.
That'd be a cool study to have.
Yeah, it's a like really very pretty room.
All wooden, dark green colors, like nicely decorated, filled
books.
Yeah,
books everywhere.
That's like our dream room to
and
have.
And they are like little nooks and crannies.
Funky angles. It's a weird place.
Yes, it is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And there's two doors on the other side of the room. On the left, there is a, like, green door, and on the right, there is a very deep purple door.
Yes. They tell him, hey, can we go, whatever. He's like, no, sorry, the doors actually don't open. They won't open till the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into his second monologue of the movie, basically, because he does not stop talking. Yeah.
I realized that I saw a lot of my dad in him, in that my dad will start talking to you either about sports or politics or both and just kind of keep going and keep going and keep going. And I feel like there's a version of my dad who turns out like this, where he just traps you and talks about the Bulls and how they're not doing so good and their ownership is bad.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially.
You've lived it, you know.
Essentially. So one thing to make note of is that Sister Paxton and Sister Barnes noticed that their coats were in that study room. So they grab their coats and they put it on, and they realized that the key to their bike lock was actually switched into the other person's coat. So it was originally in Barnes's coat, and now Sister Paxton had it.
Yeah.
So they probably were like, that's this is weird.
Yeah.
And why is it switched? So in Mr. Reed's dialogue, I don't know if you can explain this a little bit better, because
I'll take us through it. So, Manifesto Part 2.
Yes.
Mr. Reed is starting to talk to them about
iterations.
Yes, iterations is the thing. So, he is trying to talk to them about, can like, understand the idea of iterations. This is the first thing, and then there's something else that comes after it. And so, what he does, and they bring up a huge tension of, like, he's unveiling something, and he shows that there's Monopoly, the old board game Monopoly on the desk, which was like really funny how they shot into that.
It's like dun 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 dun, 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 dun
and then like boom, boom, Monopoly.
Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. He's like, Monopoly made in 1930 something, very, very popular game, made by or played by over a billion people.
In multiple languages.
Yeah, in 30 something languages. And then says, so played by a billion people. He said, I would guess only a fraction of whom have finished a game of Monopoly. And then he says, does that sound like anything to you? And he pulls out the Holy Bible.
Have you ever finished the game of Monopoly?
Yeah.
Really?
Of course I have. Yeah. Even the one where you were cheating.
I was what?
You were cheating.
I was not cheating.
You were refusing to pay.
And I went to jail for it.
And then what? You just become a
criminal.
And
I stayed in jail.
I guess maybe that is a way. Well, anyway, I have a rant on Monopoly, which is what I'll get into. But he brings up Monopoly as an analog for, this man's full of metaphors, obviously, or yes. clearly. Monopoly is a metaphor for Christianity. Yes. And that the most popular religion, most widely known, most marketed.
Yeah.
But did you know, he says, that there is an earlier iteration of Monopoly called the Landlord's Game, made by feminist Elizabeth Maggie.
Is that a true story?
It is a true story. And I have more.
So messed up.
Yeah, I have more detail on it. So Elizabeth Maggie made the Landlord's Game, which was nearly identical to Monopoly. And then this other guy, Butthead, I forget his name.
His name doesn't deserve
it. Yeah, he doesn't need to be retold. Recreates the game himself and then sells it to the Parker Brothers, so game posting studio, and makes millions off of it.
Yeah.
The other fun fact, trivia-wise, on this is that Elizabeth Maggie was making the game as a critique of capitalism.
Wow.
It was, the game was designed specifically, yeah, the game was designed specifically to say that power corrupts and money collects, and that as soon as whoever starts winning first is going to win no matter what, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Because except that's how don't Monopoly. Don't pay and go to jail.
Exactly. Break the system. So, exactly. You know what? You're revolutionary.
I was.
I'm proud of you.
I was. I'm ahead of everyone's time.
So, anyway, that's your, like, Monopoly is a bad game by design.
Yeah.
And this man took it and, like, shared it and, like, didn't even consider all of that. So, yeah, anyway, Monopoly tangent and capitalism rant over. He compares the Landlord's Game to Judaism, the original, the less popular version.
Yeah.
Of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says only 0.2% of the world practices Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, he has this religious, what would you call it? Like scarf. I don't know. It's not a scarf. It's a piece of fabric that has the three symbols of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
Like a stole, kind of?
Sure.
Something like that?
I don't know. We'll say a stole.
I don't know. Yeah. It looks like a stole.
And Islam is loosely the newest revamped version, which is like Monopoly with automated banking.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
Credit card.
Yeah. And then finally, this one made me laugh. The the zany regional spinoff. And then he shows the Book of Mormon. And then Bob Ross version Monopoly, which is very funny.
And this whole thing is to show in his point of view that religion is only iterations of the same thing.
It's very clearly a man-made thing that's been taken from old ideas to make new and to like disseminate to people.
But this wasn't enough. He had to go into polytheism and show all the different gods that had similarities,
any kind of overlap trend of rebirth or like coming back from the dead.
And I am not, I don't really think I have sides with either of them, but I will say that there is some truth to the idea of iterations and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I especially, like, I feel like I never had that revelation until we went to Guatemala and we went to the museum and we learned the story of
the Mayans.
A god that I don't remember their name.
Popol Vuh?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Wait, that's not a god, that's a...
Oh, it's the text. That's the text.
Yeah. So in Guatemala, we watched the video about the text of Popol Vuh.
Mm-hmm.
And this text talks about the creation of humans.
Yeah.
And so in the video, it went through. It was a beautiful video.
Really cool.
Yeah. I remember like watching it. I was like, wow, this is like, these are the beliefs that I could have held had my ancestry not been
colonized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in watching that video, hearing the story of the differences, which I don't remember exactly, but I know there were like parts of like the tree and like making humans out of clay.
Yes.
And there was so much overlap between that and the stories that we know from like Adam and Eve and other stories in the Bible that I recognized like, there is a part of religion and telling these stories that are a form of, like, communicating, like, storytelling.
Yeah, and just understanding, they're all trying to get at the same thing, which is, like, understanding how we got here and where we're going.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I would give Mr. Reed that much.
It's a worthwhile thing to explore.
Yeah, I don't think you can follow religion in a way and also not at least acknowledge the fact that iterations do exist or similarities do exist for better way of saying it. But back to the tension in here.
Scholar tension aside.
Exactly, exactly. So, he still says, like, do you still believe my wife is in the room?
Yeah. Now he's finally acknowledging the game. Because before, he didn't, they hadn't said anything about the candle. Yeah. They were just ready to leave.
Yeah, and he mentions, like, he asked it to pose the idea of, like, you have evidence in front of you, but you're still believing something else.
And he's in full, like, teacher mode. Yeah. I feel like he's asked that question, like,
very, as a teacher. Talking down to him also. Mm-hmm. But he makes that analogy with, like, believing in God. Like, do you still think my wife's in the room, really? Like, hello? Mm-hmm. And Sister Barnes goes to open the green door because he tells them that his wife is behind the green door. Mm-hmm. And when she opens the green door, she, like, looks very surprised.
It looks like it's going down to a... We look up at her, and she's looking down at us with a light. Yeah. And we're in, like, a dark... small hallway.
I think the shots in this movie were really very well done. They were really, really
It's certainly
well done.
Worth, like, watching. You gotta make sure your lights are off, because it's very dark.
Yeah.
Like, we were rewatching it just to make sure we were refreshed, and, like, we just had the lights on. I'm like, oh my god, I can't see anything.
So, it takes a break from this tension, and it pans to the church member in a different building who's, like, cleaning and recognizes that they have not returned because they have, like, a sign-in sheet.
Yeah.
This guy, spoiler alert, was so useless.
Incredibly useless.
But...
Yeah. Anyway, someone is trying to look for them.
Yeah.
But they're not out on their own.
Yeah. We move on to part three of the movie. These doors begin to be introduced. Oh, the other thing that he brought up was the vinyl of the song that Sue Creep.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember. And then Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. So he gave another example of iterations too through music. Yeah.
Anyway, so we move to part three of the movie where the purpose of the doors becomes introduced.
Yeah.
And so on one door he writes belief, and on the other door he writes disbelief. And mentions that they have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. He says that they can leave the house whenever they want, but they have to go through the back, and after they go through the back of the house, they would just be outside.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, they're like, there's a basement down there, so like
they saw
there were stairs and it was leading downwards.
Yeah, there was no light. There was
no
exit.
But he's like, well, you would know if you saw my house. You would know that it's like raised and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, he's having way too much fun with this.
Yeah. Okay. What would you do? What door would you go through? Let's say the two of us were there.
Mm-hmm. So, the thing I would think of is, like, what does this man want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, because, like, okay, let's assume that we didn't just, like... What I would do is I would go and I'd sit in the living room.
Yes.
Right? Because, theoretically, you know that you're being missed. They knew where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sit in the living room.
Yeah.
And make him make me do something.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm in their shoes, obviously it's harder. I would probably think that he's wanting me... I would initially think that, of course, he's wanting me to listen to his lecture and choose disbelief.
Disbelief, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then there's, like, maybe some kind of, like, 4D chess angle to it where it's like, okay, maybe he's still wanting me to choose belief. Or maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
You split up.
Yeah.
You split up because if one of those doors is the right one and leads to the outside, you can go and call for help.
That's a great idea.
Like, someone could go and call for help.
Yeah.
That would be my thing. But I also understand splitting up might...
It's more dangerous.
Might be very scary and dangerous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, Sister Paxton, who has been kind of in, like... Obviously very scared, but has been her way of survival has been to be, like, in full fawn response.
Yeah, and it aligns a lot with her character being very, like...
Oh, these are really interesting points, Mr. Reed.
Yeah, like, she's very goody-two-shoes.
Yeah, but also just, like, trying to be polite to stay safe.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, thank you, great lecture. I don't believe anymore. And
Like,
just goes beelines into disbelief.
Yeah.
Thinking, like, that's what he wants her.
Yeah.
That's hoping and praying that that's his goal. Of just, like, trying to make these Mormon missionaries atheists know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then Mr. Barnes. Sister Barnes comes here, and she, being very, like, rebellious, edgy of her, was like, Actually, no, because the only thing that matters is what we believe, and you are studying us, and you want us to see, mm-hmm. like, are we gonna stand by our beliefs or not?
Yeah, and tries to poke holes in his arguments, too, which, yeah. like, does make sense.
She brings up a good point where she talks about the idea of a spectrum, and how mm-hmm. religion isn't, like, this black and white thing, but there is a spectrum to our beliefs, mm-hmm. and I thought that was pretty cool. But at the end of the day, they choose the belief door.
Yeah.
I think I would have chosen the disbelief door.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. I think I would have chosen the belief door.
The belief door?
Yeah. But I probably would have ended up going where you go.
So, one important thing is before they leave, they find this, like, stabby thing that looks like a letter opener. And
yeah,
they
grab random it. Letter opener on a desk, yeah. and they snuck it away.
They grab it and whatever. So, they open the belief door. Mm-hmm. It's pitch black. Ugh. And they're walking down the stairs.
Dark, drippy, dank.
They look up. Mr. Reed is on the top of the whatever, and mm-hmm. he closes the door on them.
Pitch so black.
They have their flashlights on. They go down. They're walking. Then they open a door, which we would assume would take them outside. But mm-hmm. as they open the door, it is this basement dungeon thing.
Yeah.
And they realize they were tricked.
Circular dungeon. They are stuck in here.
Yeah, they are stuck. There is a table and a chair in the middle, and if you keep walking, you look, and you can see that the disbelief door also led to yeah. the same room.
It was just two different hallways.
Yeah, to the they same both place. Led to this dungeon basement situation thing. So at this point, like anyone else would do, you start to panic, mm-hmm. and you start to look around everywhere.
Yeah.
So they're trying to see, they see a little window on the top, they see if they could fit through the window, or if they could reach, but they couldn't
way too
reach.
High. Yeah. Even standing on the table and everything, they're stuck.
Exactly. So they're looking around, they're recognizing what the heck's going on. After some time of looking around, this woman comes out of nowhere.
And when you say woman...
This creature.
Yeah.
Thing comes out of nowhere.
The creepiest thing in the movie,
she
by
is
far.
Dripping.
Old, ragged.
Her feet are filled with, like, filth yeah,
feral.
And dirt. She probably smelled really bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She probably had, like, her own feces and, like,
yeah.
pee on
she
her.
Was, so this was a humanoid, human person.
Humanoid?
Yeah.
It was a human.
It was a human person, but made to be monstrous
yeah.
in a lot of ways. Corrupted, it almost looked
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I thought we were going to, like, see some kind of creature-y, mm-hmm. like, supernatural
it, yeah, it
witch
beyond,
type of thing.
Yes. Which,
yeah.
which is a good analogy
yeah,
for it.
She
and she's carrying...
She's carrying none other than a blueberry pie. So there was a blueberry pie.
That's crazy.
I guess he wasn't, like, completely
yeah, he's,
lying.
He just wanted to be honest.
At this point, I thought that was his wife, and I started thinking...
That's what I wrote down, too.
I started thinking, oh my gosh,
this
guy this
is
has
his prisoner wife
held hostage.
Yeah.
But the woman's wearing this veil, and you hear Mr. Reed's voice. He's not in the room, you can just hear his voice.
He's, like, talking through
yeah.
a tube. Yeah.
He is playing... Is this when he plays the song Creep?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he plays the song Creep, and not only is he playing the song, but he's singing. So he's like...
Very, very eerie. Yeah. Singing poorly.
Can look you in the eye.
Yeah.
I'm a creep.
While he's looking through the
yeah,
glass.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even replicate the way he was singing, but it
very
was...
Very unsettling. Super cool.
It was creepy, but it was also
effective.
Very funny.
Yeah. Yes. Also
me.
True.
I thought it was funny. He did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But the woman unveils herself. You see her teeth are like black,
yeah.
charred, filled with a bunch of things in it. Her face has dirt all over it. And she sits on a chair. And Mr. Reed says that they're in the presence of a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and explains that they're going to witness a miracle in which she's going to die and they're going to see her resurrect. He talks about how the blueberry pie actually has poison in it. And when she eats it, she will die. So what does she do?
She eats the blueberry pie.
She eats the blueberry pie.
As disgusting a way as you could eat a
yeah,
blueberry pie.
Yeah, she couldn't have like been more delicate with this. She was just like grabbing
yeah.
it with her hands and just like shoving it in her mouth.
Yeah, full on like toddler, or I mean 1 year old eating their
yeah,
their
yeah,
birthday
yeah.
cake.
Ew. I hate seeing kids eat.
Yeah,
it's
disgusting.
Gross.
But the noises too were horrible. But then, shortly after, she eats a lot of the pie, and then she goes down.
Dies.
And then Mr. Reed is like, I need you to witness this. Please confirm that she has no pulse. Please confirm that she's not breathing. So Paxton and Barnes have to go up to the prophet and make sure that she's really dead. And they see that she is.
And then all of a sudden, the door rings, and it is the missionary guy, the church guy. I don't know.
One of the higher ranking people in the church looking for Paxton and Barnes.
Mm-hmm. I forgot we moved on to part four of the movie.
Oh, yeah. The doorbell rings, and Paxton and Barnes think that this is maybe their chance to get one up onto Mr. Reed.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Reed's going to the door. They run up the hallway towards the door that, towards the disbelief door.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that there's some matches on the floor.
Yeah.
So they're trying to pull his rug to get matches before he comes back, which I don't even know what these matches were for.
They wanted to start a fire so that the church guy
could see it.
See the fire, yes. And yes. Like call for help or come yeah. help them themselves.
Yes, you're right. However, they were in a dark and wet and cold, yeah, rocky basement.
It was dripping. There was like a drip from the top of the ceiling. Yeah. But they come back down the stairs, and Sister Paxton notices that the prophet woman, witch lady,
mm-hmm.
her head was in a different position. And she's like, oh my gosh, she moved. And Sister yeah. Barnes is like, stop being ridiculous. She didn't move.
Because yeah. we think that Paxton's thinking, oh, a miracle's about to happen.
Yeah.
And Barnes is like, don't fall for it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they're in the corner, or there's not even a corner, it's a circle. They're in the side wall. And they're trying to light the matches. It keeps going off
mm-hmm.
when all of a sudden you see the prophet woman, like, stand up.
Oh, my God.
And she is right behind
yeah. She's them. Right there, and they light a match, and she's right as, like, you see yeah. her as the match lights.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Very scary.
She goes and she reads.
Conductor says my name. White clouds, not heaven. Unlock my brain.
Okay.
It is not real.
After she says that, Mr. Reed comes down. He grabs her very gently and is like, well, you all have witnessed a miracle. How about you, Prophet? You go back to bed, whatever.
Yeah.
Then we move on to what I start to think of, like, as a switching point in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where he starts to, like, I don't know. It becomes very weird.
Yeah.
The movie becomes weird.
He's less cool, calm, collected, and, like, having fun with it.
He tells them that they witnessed a miracle,
mm-hmm.
and he says, you know what, you can see what happens in the afterlife, too.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get them to kill themselves, essentially. He's like, if you do this, you're also going to see
mm-hmm. what she saw.
What she saw, yeah. And then we learn a fun fact about Sister Barnes, because Sister Barnes is, like, not taking any of this. The entire time, she's been the one that, like, pushes back on him.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about how she had a near-death experience after she ate Taco Bell.
A true thing. A true story in Philly.
And they call it Taco Hell.
Yeah.
But she got E. coli, and she said that when she was dying, she had this near-death experience where she started seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they did Taco Bell dirty.
But it's a true thing that happened.
But it is a true thing, but like...
Yeah. Taco Bell was part of the fast food things. Well, damn. They shouldn't have had the E. coli outbreak.
I don't know. I feel like justice for Taco Bell.
They're doing fine.
They are doing fine. I just... For me, it's the nacho fries.
Okay. No, we don't need to give them an ad. Like,
there's just a time where you... Like, I want Taco Bell now.
Mm-mm.
There's, like, times where you just crave it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get Taco Bell after this.
Oh, gosh.
She says that this is just fleeting and it's a near-death reaction, and she challenges him.
Mm-hmm.
He starts to get closer to her as she's talking about this. And one thing that I forgot to mention is that they had a code word. So the letter opener stabby thing...
Was given to Paxton.
They gave to Sister Paxton, which is like, she's the most, like,
yeah, because
sweetest,
he would,
delicate person.
Yeah, he wouldn't expect her to have
yeah.
it. He'd be more, Sparn said he's more suspicious of her.
Yeah, so they give her the letter opener, and they agreed that whenever they say the word magic underwear,
mm-hmm.
that Paxton should
signal.
Stab him.
Yeah.
So... Anyways, all that to say, Mr. Reed starts to approach Sister Barnes, and they're talking, and he's like, you know, challenging mm-hmm. her, and she's challenging him. And then Sister Barnes says magic underwear because they're having a conversation, and then she says it.
And the camera cuts.
Yeah, you can see Sister Paxton, like, grab the letter opener thing.
Yeah.
And then what you see is instead of her stabbing him, he has this knife
box cutter
mm-hmm. and slices
Barnes's
throat.
Yeah.
He just slits her throat.
Yeah. We see the angle of the blood from her throat falling onto her hands.
This, for me, I was shocked. I was so shocked when I saw this.
Mm-hmm. It was the first act of violence.
It was.
Physical violence in the entire movie, an hour and 20 minutes in.
I did not think that he was a murderer.
Yeah.
I thought that it would be something where, like, they ended up killing themselves mm-hmm. or they were just trapped there for life yeah. and died.
It was so striking because of how, like, you know, visibly harmless he was.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's obnoxious and keeping them hostage. But, like, that, it just seemed very out of character for him. Mm-hmm. It was very scary.
So, Barnes is obviously on the floor, bleeding out. Mm-hmm. And he says, she'll revive. He goes up to her and realizes that she's actually dead. And so, he says, well, actually, I think I know why she's not, you know, mm-hmm. resurrecting. He goes and grabs her arm. And what is this part of your arm called? Your bicep?
Yeah, your bicep. He grabs his box cutter.
Yeah.
And cuts into her bicep. Very gross. They showed that one in excruciating detail.
Like, that, for me, was my scaredy cat moment.
Oh, I forgot mine. Shoot. Mine was where they lit the match and the prophet was up.
Oh.
That was my scaredy cat moment of the week. That was freaky.
You know, I thought it was because you seemed extra scared.
I jumped at it. I literally jumped at it. Both times I saw it.
Yeah. But mine is scary because, I don't know, thinking about slicing, which is crazy because I have a tattoo on my bicep,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't matter to me, the idea of, like, sticking a needle and, like, pulling it.
Less visceral.
No, but the thing for me that, like, it's just the touching the bicep.
Mm, with like, anything. Touching the inside of
like,
the bicep
I could grab these little scissors and slap.
Okay.
It, like, makes me...
Interesting.
Yeah. Ooh.
The thing that made it so scary is he's cutting into her arm.
And he grabs her vein!
Yeah, so he's digging into his hands, and they did a really good job of having her blood get on his fingers and have it progressively get more bloody as he's going. So you could see him pull out something. He's like, oh, here it is. Oh, no, that's
a
vein.
How puts elastic it back is your in, vein?
Very, pretty elastic.
I was just thinking, like, grab a vein and it's
No. Like, I one time worked on a cadaver arm, or, like, studied, like, had a surgeon teach us techniques on a cadaver arm. And you could see, like, we were working with the nerve, but the nerve is stretchy. Yeah. Cadaver arm's fingernails were also painted, which is just for anyone to know.
That's what I scary. Want. When I am dead, I want my nails painted.
Yeah. And then your arm can be donated to science.
But I want a cute design.
Yeah, of course. I got you. But anyway, so then he pulls out a little metal...
bar device. Yeah,
you know, 2 inches long. Very thin.
Very thin.
And tries to play it off as like, oh, this is why. This is a microchip. She's not a real person. She's a simulation. Or she's a... What did you call it?
Yeah, she's not a real human.
Yeah. This must be happening. This must be from when she died. And then she's just been... This is her programming.
Yeah. So he tries to, like, make this whole idea that it was a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that some people are real, some people are not.
He's trying to get Paxton back on his side. Through mm-hmm. all this.
And trying to get Paxton to believe the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So Paxton, she starts to remember that Barnes told her to challenge him. Mm-hmm. So this is where we see a shift in Paxton's personality, where she starts to become a little bit like Barnes. She starts to, like, emulate Barnes. Yeah.
She's starting to question and think for herself. And she's no longer in the fawn area because she realizes that's not going to save her.
Mm-hmm. At this point, we are in part 5 of the movie. We're, like, approaching the climax, or have reached the climax. I don't even know. This movie was so long and so much dialogue that
yeah.
I'm identifying
the
these different parts.
The plot is very different. Or, like, yeah, the way it's plotted, the scenes are very different. But it's cool.
Anyway, so Paxton comes down and she's like, I don't believe your crap.
Yeah, I was so like proud of her. For that.
She's like, this is all lies. You're lying to me. And here's what actually happened. Mm-hmm. When we heard the doorbell ring, we walked up the stairs and we were distracted. And while we were distracted, someone came and switched the bodies.
Yeah.
And she noticed that the head was moved. And so that further confirmed to her that the bodies were switched. And so the person actually died. Mm-hmm. And there was no resurrection. But it was just a
switched a dead body with a live person.
And then she says that person was given a script to read, but they went off script. And at the end, they said, it is not real. And they said, Sister Paxton said, that Mr. Reed did not anticipate that last line, and it threw him off his game, essentially. Mm-hmm. This, for me, I was like,
Whoa.
I could not
Pretty
believe.
Pretty cool twist.
I could not believe what was going on. I could not believe that Paxton figured it out either, because mm-hmm. they kind of portrayed her as like a little dumb person.
Mm-hmm. But she also was not, you know.
Yeah, but they, maybe not dumb, like ditzy.
Yes.
They portrayed her as being ditzy. Mm-hmm. So she starts looking around and she sees that there is a door underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Reed starts questioning her. It's like, okay, if that's true, then there'd have to be a way to get rid of the body.
Yeah.
And then so she finds the door.
This made me so mad mm-hmm. because I was like,
the trapdoor was there the whole time.
Yes, I was like, why wouldn't you look
under
around
under the table? I mean, dark.
No,
and
if I was trapped somewhere, they you better believe I would look at every square
yes,
inch of that room
for sure. They didn't have his oil lamp that was lighting it. It was way darker.
True, but they had their phones.
No, true.
They had their phone flashlights.
Fair point. Yeah. Finds the trapdoor, and then Reed says, "Well, if that's true, the body should be down there." And so the only way she can do it is to climb down into this thing and continue on, which she does. She goes down the tunnel. Mr. Reed is just watching her go. She's in it. It's gross, small, creepy, dirty. And then she sees her bike lock, the red bike lock that she has the key for because it was put in her coat pocket on a door, on a, like a big mechanical door. She goes and she opens it to an ice-cold room. Or, like, walks through a bunch of things of religious imagery, creepy lair type stuff, and then eventually finds a room filled with cages and lit with, like, gross LED lights filled with women who look like these prophets.
Yeah, they're all, like, wrapped around these, like, white sheets.
Yeah.
They're, like, filthy, mm-hmm. shaking, shivering, and you can tell, like, oh, crap. Mr. Reed has been, like,
he's been at it.
He's been doing some stuff. Mm-hmm. He has been doing
There's probably, 10 cages in there filled with women?
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Like 8 or 10.
Yeah.
At this point, Mr. Reed comes in through the other side. Mm-hmm. And he's like, have you figured out what the one true religion is? Mm-hmm. And she goes and she's like, yes. And is he the one that tells her what happened or she tells him.
She tells him.
She tells
she
him.
She says, I'm not here because I chose to be here. I'm here because you made me choose to be.
So this is what happened. When he took their coats and went to check on his wife the first time, he actually walked outside, hid the bikes,
yeah.
took the bike lock, and switched the keys from Barnes's coat to Paxton's coat. So he gave the bike lock to one of the prophets so that they can go through that tunnel and lock the door. Mm-hmm. And Paxton realizes that everything was part of Mr. Reed's plan. Mr. Reed planned for Paxton to be the one mm-hmm. to go down there and open the lock and to find yes. the people.
He even planned for the pastor to come and check
yeah,
on them and switch, have time for the bodies to switch.
He planned everything from
the moment they got there.
Exactly. And so that's where she says the line, like, I'm not here because I chose to be here. I'm here because you made me choose to be here. But she recognizes that according to Mr. Reed, the one true religion is control.
Yes.
And I gasped. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it.
All of that to make his point to one person he's going to brainwash. Or exactly. Try to brainwash.
He has problems.
Yes.
He needs religion.
He needs Jesus.
He needs Jesus. So he mentions this. She's crying, distraught, yeah, as she should.
She realizes
be.
The reality of her situation now.
And he's approaching her, and he's like he's, caressing yeah. her.
He's also watering the women.
Oh yeah.
He has a like the what do you call it? The thing for watering plants, the big jug for watering plants.
I didn't see that.
And he was filling their like water bowls like they were cats or
Ew.
Dogs.
Yeah, because they were in like these crates.
Yeah. So he was just filling their water bowls like that. Horrifying.
So she goes and she says magic underwear and she stabs him in the neck as mm-hmm. she should. I was so proud of yeah. the location of her stabbing.
Yeah, she went right up in the, like under his jugular.
Like where his Adam's apple would be.
Yeah.
More
and, like,
or less.
Up into it, yeah.
Because, listen, in a lot of movies, when someone stabs someone
I'm
else.
Just gonna stab them broadly
they, like,
in the body.
Move it. Yeah, they'll like stab their
or,
cheek.
Or like slice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, dude.
You gotta make their function stop.
Exactly. So when she stabs him like right in the middle of the throat, mm-hmm. I was like, yes,
this
girl.
This girl watches Grey's yes, Anatomy.
Here for it. She runs.
Yes.
And runs and goes up these stairs, goes up the ladder, gets into this room, and we're here thinking, like, thank God she made it back to the study. Mm-mm. But it's not the study. She opens another door, and when she opens that door, she realizes she's back in the basement near the stairs.
Yeah.
So it was like this circle.
This she went to a side room off of the stairs that went up to the study, because the yeah. door going to the study was still locked.
Yeah.
And she couldn't get in.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like this circle where she essentially ended up right back in the basement mm-hmm. place. Yeah.
So she's trapped.
Yeah.
She can't get out.
Oh my gosh. My favorite part of this movie, mm-hmm. when she walks out and sees that she's trapped, they pan to this poster that says Inferno.
Yeah, it was Dante's Inferno.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, that was amazing timing, amazing like placement of it. The poster itself, it was like this beige poster, very aesthetic. It wasn't cool. Like you see like this devil in like a
no,
comic
no.
strip type of thing.
It was just a thing he had in his office.
Yeah, it was like a bunch of shape, like this upside down triangle. Mm-hmm.
The like layers of hell, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah,
I think if we went through more critically, maybe there could be some parallels to that.
Because for me, the way I interpreted it was like, she's in hell.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's yeah. no getting out of this. Mm-hmm. She runs back down to the basement. She's just there like, what the hell do I do? He comes behind her. He stabs her. And she goes and she sits down. He's bleeding out of his neck. He tells her to pray. And she's like, praying doesn't work. But the good thing with prayer is you can think about someone like someone else, even if it is yourself. So mm-hmm. she kind of recognizes this point of like, you know, praying and my faith might not be real.
But
it's
it is a
nice,
nice thing.
To think about because mm-hmm. it brings these other good elements yeah. or components into.
And I feel like that's what the movie maker's feelings are mm-hmm. on religion. We're like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they don't have the answers, but like, it's a good thing to wish well for people.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and I think that's like the same sentiment behind telling someone like I'm sending you good vibes
yeah.
or like mm-hmm. energy.
Yeah. So like, if yeah. you're worried about this movie. As far as like, it's just going to be sitting through an atheist's rants for 2 hours. I feel like the movie actually has a positive sentiment towards religion from this. You have to look at it through the lens of this crazy man.
As Sister Paxton is bleeding out, he starts to like drag himself towards her.
Very weird.
He like puts him, his
like
head
nuzzles
on her
up against
chest.
Her.
Yeah. Like, starts cuddling, essentially.
Ew.
It's, like, breathing. And then he grabs the box knife, and he's about to, like, slice her throat mm-hmm. also. When all of a sudden, Sister Barnes comes out with this plank of wood and
it's
nails.
It's a miracle.
And just, poof, hits him in the head.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. She collapses. He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Paxton then goes ahead and escapes. She goes out through this window. She's running. She has her phone. We see that her phone has no cell service. And she's just, like, still bleeding. So as she's bleeding and running, it is snowing. Mm-hmm. She falls on her knees. And she's just, like, trying, I guess, to, like, keep it together. when all of a sudden you see a butterfly on her hand. Earlier in the movie, she talks about how if she were dead, she would like to come back to people in the form of a butterfly. Mm-hmm. And she says that she would want the butterfly to land on her hand so that people would know it's her.
Yes.
Now, a butterfly was referenced a second time in the movie when...
Mr. Reed referenced also earlier in the movie the butterfly dream theory, basically referencing an old philosopher that stated, well, when we have a dream that we are a butterfly, is that what is real? Or is the reality that we are butterflies dreaming that we are humans?
Yeah.
You know, basically saying, like, you know, what is actually
what's reality and what's not. Like, I could totally be a butterfly right now.
Just, like, being in the most immersive dream ever.
Yeah, and think that I'm a human.
Yeah. So this is what we see at the end of the movie, where Sister Paxton is now seeing the butterfly. It has, like, the dramatic music, and then the music cuts, and there's no butterfly.
And the butterfly was in her hand.
Yes. Specific, importantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the music cuts, there's no butterfly.
It's silent.
It's silent. And then you see her, like, look around, and she looks worried. Mm-hmm. And then, boom.
Credits.
Movie, credits.
Knock, 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 knocking on heaven's door.
Yeah. When I watched this movie, I genuinely thought that she was alive.
I see that. I understand that. I personally think...
I am the optimist.
You are the optimist, and I love that about you. But I feel like this is a hallucination of her, like, at the end of her life, thinking that Barnes came back, which she was very dead beforehand.
Yeah.
And took out Mr. Reed, and then this is her, like, dying at the end. Because we still don't know how she got out.
She got out a window.
Through a vent, yeah.
When I watched it, was like, this is a good, happy ending. Like, she got out, she won.
Yeah.
You know, but if I have to be realistic...
You don't have to be.
I feel like I have to be realistic. And I think what was so genius about the ending is that they took this theme about finding evidence.
Yeah.
What do you believe in? What is your faith in? Mm-hmm. And made that so that
now that's a question we have to ask ourselves. Viewer. That's such a good point. Oh my gosh.
Where it's like, well, what do you believe in now? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm here like, I want to believe.
You want to go through the belief door.
Yeah. I want to believe that she lived. But I also know, like, well, everything from the butterfly scene to the fact that her phone didn't have service to her face at the end to knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door at the credit scene made me believe, like, she probably died.
Yeah.
And they talked a lot about near-death experiences and how your mind wants to see what it wants to see in your last moments. I think that's what was going on, where she wanted to see her escape. She wanted to see Sister Barnes. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, it makes me sad because I think about just the two of them in this dungeon basement
dead. Man.
Yeah. And having that be the end of their story.
It's tragic.
It is tragic. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of...
That's it.
Heretic.
It's not a happy ending.
Heretic or heretic?
Heretic.
Heretic. Oh my gosh, I always forget.
It's hard. But I think a very well done... on heaven's door... I think the movie did a wonderful job of building social tension and, like, really leveraging that. And I think also keeping thematic resonance throughout as far as the, you know, keeping the belief, disbelief, how all of this relates to religion and how we, the viewer, also interface with religion, too.
Yeah.
I think it raises a lot of really, it makes you think.
It was very neatly laid out.
Yes, it was well laid out. I think that if you try to examine deeper some of the motivations of Mr. Reed, like, what's he there for other than control? I feel like that those might fall a little short. The horror of the women he's holding hostage and torturing or...
Who are now just gonna die.
Yeah. It's scary, but then, like, I don't know how deep it goes, you know?
Yeah.
All in all, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it the first time. I enjoyed thinking about it through the second time.
Yeah.
Mm. What did you think about it?
I really liked it. I think it's definitely a slow burner. Mm-hmm. It was hard to recap just because there was so much dialogue.
Yeah, it's not any, like, active scenes. Yeah. It's conversation.
But I think maybe some might look at the movie and find it boring. Mm-hmm.
But it's really well performed, I feel like. All of them felt like they were very much their characters, and it was engaging to watch, to me.
Yeah, the characters felt very real to me. And overall, it was just an enjoyable movie. I agree with you about how it can be easy to watch for, like, people who are not into the most gory things. The most gory thing was my scaredy cat moment, which was the IUD that was removed from
yeah.
her arm.
Yeah, if you close your eyes or mute it, I would say more importantly it is to mute it at the pie-eating scene and, like, around the when the quote-unquote prophets are out there. But it's an interesting watch, and I would recommend it if, like, just so much to experience the themes or, like, the feelings of suspense and tension in a horror movie. And also to come out of it with a sad ending.
Do you believe or do you disbelieve?
That is the true question.
That is the one true question. Yeah. But that was our recap for Heretic.
Heretic? Yeah.
And...
yeah, thank you for listening. I had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun too, and we're excited to recap maybe some movies that have more plots.
Yeah. this is a learning experience.
This one was definitely, it was a slow burner, and also just the dialogue amount was like crazy amount. Mm-hmm.
But I still felt like it was cool to talk about and think more about.
And if you want to watch the movie, like, there's so much more that we didn't include.
Yeah.
That just really makes the movie what it is. Very suspenseful.
Yeah, I believe it's streaming on Max for anyone if they're interested. So go check it out. It's cool.
Check it out, and we will see you all
in the next one.
Next episode.
Yeah.
Dun, dun.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Oh, bum, bum, bum. Goodbye.
Bye.